Hello, friends. Welcome to the first episode of a new podcast and video show, The Uprising of Women in Philanthropy. It is based on the 2024 book that is certain to be a bestseller. Indeed, the tome, written by 10 powerful authors based around the globe, tells the inspired, never-before-told story of the global women's funding movement. It's considered the women's movement's greatest secret, and this book teaches us how to enable women from all walks of life to harness the power of money to free themselves from oppression. Just amazing. My company, Incandescent, had the privilege of creating a website for this book. It is uprisingofwomeninphilanthropy.com, so please visit us there. But today's podcast is really the juice. So I'm going to throw this over to Dr. Chris Grum, who is an author and consultant. You'll also meet Dr. Masumbi Kanyaro, author and former president and chief executive officer of the Global Fund for Women, and Dr. Jane Sloan, author and senior director at the Asia Foundation. So take it away, Chris.
Thank you so much, Hope. We have a wonderful opportunity to have a conversation with my co-authors, three of the 10, but also wonderful friends and colleagues. We've worked together for, it must be at least two decades. At least I know Masumbi and I. 2 to 3 decades that we've worked together. So Jane and Masumbi, before we get started, let's just do a quick round of introductions. So Masumbi, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am part of this team because I have been in the women's movement for many years, and specifically in the philanthropy of women's movement, having begun from seeing how women of faith give and then how women give to philanthropy. So I am delighted to be here. For this podcast.
Oh, great. Thanks so much, Masumbi. That's great. Masumbi has such a long resume, she can't get into it. You know, it's pages and pages, books, whatever. So, Masumbi, thank you for the concise introduction. Jane, what about you?
Well, I think, Chris, both you and Masumbi are legends, and so I feel really honored to be in your company today. My former role was as Vice President of Programs with Global Fund for Women, during the time that Masumbi was president and CEO. And like Masumbi, like you, my engagement with the global women's funding movement has really been through that strong lens of philanthropy. I was the executive director of International Women's Development Agency in Australia and then vice president of development with Women's World Banking. And so was really excited about the opportunity to be a co-author with this book, because it's such an important story to be told. It needs to be better told. It's a phenomenal electric movement that's changed the face of philanthropy. And we often talk about transformative change. Well, this book really provides the stories and the strategies and the solutions about how we really shift power and shift resources and norms and narratives. So it's really exciting to be having this conversation.
Well, thanks so much. And we're thrilled to have Jane on our side of the pond. She's actually in the U.S., but she also resides at least half the year in Australia. And Masumbi is in Kenya, Nairobi right now, but she also moves back and forth and around the world, as you can see the map behind her. I'm Chris Grum. I have been involved in the women's movement from the age of 15 on, been involved in women, money, and philanthropy for the last at least 25 years. It's been since 1996, I guess, where I was the executive director of the Chicago Foundation for Women, and then the president and CEO of the Women's Funding Network, and then working with a variety of funds through my consulting work for the last decade. So all of us come with a variety of experiences, but deeply ingrained and embedded in the women's funding movement. So let me just share with you a couple things. If you read the preface of the book, that'll help you kind of understand the overall global women's funding movement. And the thing about it is that it's a shocking, in many ways, when you read the book, about what this movement has been about, because people haven't heard. And particularly in philanthropy, it's gotten lost in philanthropy. So that's why a lot of us came together and did this book. And the Uprising of Women in Philanthropy it's that title that really emphasizes and describes what happened in the global women's funding movement as the development of women's funds and foundations and giving circles and networks came together. And so that's why we felt that was a really appropriate title for this book. And both Musimi and Jane, you can, you know, speak to that when you tell your stories. It parallels the women's movement. So it came out of the women's movement. And it's because the women's movement is out there organizing, working with activists, that then the Global Women's Funding Movement came about, because who's going to fund all this work on the ground? So that's kind of the basis, and that's a very parallel. Diverse communities, regions, cultures, but shared ideals around equity and justice. That's the amazing thing about it. It has diversity about where it is, but shared ideals in equity and justice. And one of the words that we use is women sharing culture, because that really epitomizes what the Global Women's Funding Movement is. It's about sharing. So when we talk about women and wealth and women and money and power, it's not about individuals. It's about collective. That's really the key here. It's collective power and collective use of monetary funding, et cetera. And so I think the sharing, women's sharing culture is really a key phrase that we talk about. And it's also about trusting women, girls, and gender expansive people when they tell us their stories about what's going on in the ground. But it's not only telling of the story, it's not only that truth, but it's also the truth around strategies and solutions for how to make a difference. So what we do in the Global Women's Funding Movement through women's funds, foundations, et cetera, is that we fund those strategies. We fund those solutions. And that's why this is such a close and very well connected movement. So I want to finish by telling you, this is one of my favorite things. There's a saying that says, if you want to, if you give a woman a fish, she'll eat for the day. If you teach a woman or a person a fish, they'll eat for a lifetime. This is what we say in the Women's Funding Movement. If you give a woman a fish, she'll feed her family first and probably won't be able to find more food. If you teach a woman to fish, again, she'll feed her family first and keep doing that until the lake becomes polluted and is no longer, she loses her fishing rights. But if you give women the resources to actually buy the lake and to manage the lake, then they will be able to feed their family, themselves, keep it clean, and it's sustainable for generations to come. And that's what we do in the Global Women's Funding Movement. We talk about sustainability by giving women the power, or they already have the power, but funding that in order for them to make change. So having started with that as a general, that's kind of gives you an overview. Let's see, Jane, talk to us a little bit about, you know, the concepts that you think were important and the story or stories that you want to share with us. And then we'll move on to Musimbi.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I think you've outlined that really well. I mean, I think also just building on what you were saying, the Global Women's Funding Movement was really founded to give women a way to collectively wield their money as a source of great power for all women. It was really designed to shift power and resources and narratives and norms and policies through women's giving. And this, of course, has created a virtuous cycle. It's created stronger, more independent women, with more wealth, who by investing in women's rights are creating the next generation of stronger, even more independent women to be able to invest their money in women's human rights. I also think that the concept that really underpins the movement of nothing about us without us, that trust-based philanthropy is really crucial, that you actually provide unrestricted funds, flexible funds to women leaders, women's organizations who know best how to use that money to be able to affect change in their communities. And one really powerful example of that was a woman in Papua New Guinea, Janet Sarpe. She had a banking background. She'd seen the impact on women who, two-thirds of women in Papua New Guinea experience some form of violence. And the challenge for them is not only experiencing that violence, it's the inability to be able to break out of that violence. Because at the time when Janet had this dream, women needed their husband's signature to open a bank account. to be able to have any form of independence. And so Janet saw the creation of a microbank for women as being a game changer in the country. It would be a way for women to be able to open their own bank accounts and have this independence. And so she sought funding from Global Fund for Women, the time that I was there, at the time that Masimbi was president, and we provided this support to her and her organization, and they really mobilized women across the country to advocate for this microbank for women. And they really wanted to be able to attract the support from the government to open a banking, to secure a banking license and to make this a reality. But they couldn't get this banking license as much as she advocated for it. And so in support of Janet's leadership, at the time I was on the board of the Women's Funding Network, and we had something called a LEAD Award to really lift up the leadership of women and the work that they were doing for justice. And so we nominated Janet for a LEAD Award. We flew her to Washington, where we had the National Women's Funding Network Conference. And Chris, you'll remember this from all of your years of being the CEO of the Women's Funding Network. You have hundreds of women coming, not only from within the US, but from other countries, to really share the strategies that they're undertaking as women's funds. And so in this environment, Janet stood up before this audience and she said, "I come from a small country, and we women, we really thought that we were alone in our country. We have big dreams, but it's very challenging for women to be able to break free of the violence that they experience in their lives. And so this is a huge honor for me to be able to represent not just myself in receiving this award, but all the women in our country." And what was really important was that we also beamed the footage of Janet receiving this award and speaking about what it meant to the women of Papua New Guinea. We beamed the footage back to Papua New Guinea. And so by the time she arrived back in her country after receiving this award, she was like a rock star. She was on every TV station. She was a front page story in the newspaper. Everyone knew that she'd been to the US, that she'd received this award. Everyone in Papua New Guinea knew about her dream for a microbank. And about 3 weeks after she returned, the governor of the country invited her to a signing of the banking license. She received the banking license. And then some 3 years later, over 20,000 women had opened their bank account, had opened new bank accounts, had received the compulsory financial literacy training. And she was also then recognized with a suite of other awards. She was appointed to different government positions. And so that is the power of the Global Women's Funding Movement. It's not just that you trust the ideas and the dreams of women, you get the money to them to make that a reality, but then you also connect them to powerful forums where they can speak about their dreams, where they can feel like a global women's funding movement, that solidarity is backing their dreams. And that then helps them to be in a much more powerful position when they return home to their countries and communities and can then realize those dreams, and therefore the dreams of thousands, hundreds of thousands, often of women in their own communities.
That's such a great story, Jane. You know, every time you tell it, you remind me of kind of what happened and how it changed. And you just aren't always so aware of what the difference you can make with one award, with one grant, with one, et cetera. So thanks for sharing that. That just really shows the power. And that helps us kind of hop over to Musimbi. So you've talked about people who've been grantees, and of course, we're always in a partnership relationship with grantees. It's never us and them. It's always together. And so let's talk about donors. Musimbi, share a little bit of what your thinking is, why you as a author got engaged in the book. You talked a little bit about that and a story that you might want to share with us.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you, Jane, because I know that story and love telling that story too, among the many stories that we have experienced as we meet in the women's movement. I wanted specifically to try to tease out a little bit. When you read this book, you will actually find that sometimes the space between a donor and a grantee is very small. because we become each other in the process of the work of the women's movement. So two stories that I want to lift up. One was four women actually started the Global Fund for Women, but they went to Mombasa, which is in my own country, and met a woman who was in that place doing the work and depending on the funding that they could raise locally, meaning that they were donors of themselves. But this woman visiting her, Aunt Fatima Marie, saw that if they had extra funding, their work will expand and they would get the recognition. So she didn't begin from the fact that here are miserable people who want to have funding, but rather here are people helping themselves. And if they can get more help, they will do better. And that inspired her to go and ask other women, first approaching women of her own level to say, let's begin something together. Over and over, I have found as we have visited the global women's movement, it's global because there is some form of donors in every space that we go. Rita Thapa is a woman from Nepal who was part of the global women's movement covered in this book. And having experienced what other women were doing elsewhere in the world through her time in the USA, she went back to Nepal and said, we need to begin a women's fund to be able to fund what we think is important to the local women. And people said, we have no money. And she said, but we have bangles. She said, we have bangles. If each one of us would just give one of our bangles, we would be able to start a fund. And then along the way, we'll find other resources. So there was donors being born to fund their own work. And this fund, the Nepal Women's Fund, became one of the large women's funding movement from Nepal, with local women also connecting with women from other parts of the world, either through women's funds or individual women who gave their life to support the work that was doing in Nepal. And I want to tell you another story. Isabel Allende is a woman I love to my heart. She writes books. Everybody who actually reads good books should read the book of Isabel Allende, at least one of them. Originally, she came from Chile, and she's always funded women. She's in the women's funding movement in the sense that she's an author who sees part of her income as good to contribute towards the rights of women everywhere in the world. And she's a woman who creates her stories on the life of women who are exactly the women that we find in the women's funding movement. Every time that I would go to her to tell her about the work that she funded, either in Chile, in the rest of the world, I found that not only was she feeling like she's a donor, she never at one time made me feel like I was visiting a donor, but she made me feel like I was visiting one of the women who experience the same things that women on the local level experience. What I'm trying to say is that many of the donors, and I can tell you story after story of the women who are covered in this book, and those that we couldn't even cover, whether it's Isabel Allende, or Abigail Disney, etc. These women reflect, they are a mirror image in their own activism of the women that they help fund, because they have more resources and they know that our experiences as women is the same. Whether you belong to a different race, whether you have more money, whether you have less money, the same kind of women that I once talked about in my TED Talk by saying, my own mother was a strong philanthropist in the same way as Melinda Gates is. And that's what this book tells you. It gives you story after story of women philanthropists on the ground and women philanthropists who have more resources. But together, when we bring these resources together, we make the bigger the bigger image of a movement of women philanthropists.
The other extraordinary thing about this fund was that they raised the funds to be able to buy the building. And so that provided them, to your point, Chris, about the pond, the fishing and buying the pond, they were able to buy the building, which gave them security of organizing. And at a time when the space for women's organizing in so many countries is diminishing and the role of the strong men and so many governments that are really cracking down on women, for women's funds to be able to mobilize funds, to be able to have these safe, secure spaces for organizing is just crucial. And so again, it speaks to really investing in the vision of these women's funds and leaders.
Yes, I'm listening to both of you. I mean, both of you lifted up such great stories. I also can remember being in Nepal and Taiwan, sitting in the middle of a group of women donors who told the bangle story. And, oh, man, was it ever moving to be there in the midst of, and then to be in the building that they bought and put together and now are running as a business, as a center for women coming together. And same with Musimi, some of the stories that you told. I'm wondering, because part of this book is, besides just telling the story and getting the word out there about the women's funding movement, part of it is to invite people in, and particularly women in, to the story and to become a part of the story, to be one of the many voices. And I'm wondering, as we think about this and kind of look at this conversation we're having, if you might have some final thoughts about how do we invite women into this story that we've told, and what is it that they can be looking at, they can find there, and they can become a part of. So either one of you, I'd like to hear from both of you, but whoever wants to say that as kind of our final, as we wrap up, as we've been talking to each other.
The span of the women's funding is nearly 50 years or a little more, as we can see. But we can also see that the things that we achieved, the rights that we achieved, are threatened at this moment. And if we see that our rights are threatened today, some of the achievements that this funding has made, whether it's in the area of reproductive health, whether it's in the area of getting women in the decision-making or improving the economic well-being, are all threatened. They are threatened politically, they are threatened socially, they are threatened by movements of faith, religious groups, and they are threatened especially by conflicts in the world. We can't sit and say we achieved this at this moment. We can't say a foundation has been laid. But for that foundation to stay strong, we, in this book, invite many other people to come to the table and to come to the table in today's world. Today's world where when this movement was started by those before us, they could write notes in their own language and post over many, many months to get wherever it was going. But today, with the communication systems, with AI, we know that a lot of people have a lot of information that either builds or destroys us. And this book is conscious of that, asking people now to be conscious and get into the movement so that we can reclaim and strengthen that which we have achieved, but also get the new rights that will help women be able to survive in a new time with new technologies, new challenges, new environmental and climate change. So this is a lucha continua. It is not a finished project. It's work in progress.
Thanks so much, Musimi. And it's always helpful to remind us, it's not done. You know, this is a book about what needs to be done as well. Jane, thoughts on this as we wind up?
Yeah, well, it was Angela Davis who said that the importance of doing activist work is precisely because it does allow you to give back and consider yourself not as a single individual who might have achieved whatever, but as part of an ongoing historical movement. And that is the global women's funding movement. It represents an investment in a vision where every woman, every person can live free of violence, where there's an equitable sharing of power and resources, where diversity and Indigenous wisdom and practices are heard, a world where biodiversity is restored and poverty and injustice are history, where women can have full control over their bodies and where all people have freedom of movement and identity and expression. And so I think it is really, instead of feeling like you have to go it alone in changing the world, you can be part of this phenomenal, incredible, electric movement for justice. And, you know, I think that just ending with these words from the late Wangari Maathai, the founder of the Green Belt Movement, where she said, in the course of history, there comes a time where humanity is called to shift to a new level of consciousness, to reach a higher moral ground, a time when we have shed our fear and given hope to each other. That time is now, and it really doesn't feel more urgent than this point in history.
I think that is, that's a great quote to help us wind up. Please, when you think about the book, when you read the book, think about yourself in the midst of this story. And it's a new way of looking at money and power. It's not the traditional way of looking at money and power, but it's looking at money and power through the lens of social justice and change. So we invite you who are out there who might be listening to this to come on in, be a part of the Global Women's Funding Movement, and help us to kind of move this forward to the next decade, the next generation. So thank you so much for listening. It's been great to be with you, Jane and Musimbi. As usual, it's wonderful to hear you. Every time I listen to you two, I learn something new. And it's really great to be a part of this. And thank you so much for being with us and being a part of it.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you all. That was amazing. And I can't wait to hear more. Episodes 2 and 3 will be coming. And this is The Uprising of Women Philanthropy, a wonderful book. Let's see, I'm trying to get it on the camera. Uprisingofwomenphilanthropy.com. Please check us out online. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, proud producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and Incandescent TV. And you'll also be able to listen to us on Spotify, Apple, and iHeartRadio. So again, uprisingofwomenphilanthropy.com. Thank you, Musimbi, Chris, and Jane, for your time today. We look forward to hearing much more from you in the months and years to come. Take care, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.